Have you forgotten that once we were brought here, we were robbed of our name, robbed of our language. We lost our religion, our culture, our God. And many of us, by the way we act, we even lost our mind.
Here it is. Here it is.
Listening to Just My Thoughts on G Blue Radio, powered by Blog Talk Radio for GraffitiBlue, worldwide at gblue.com.
Hey yo, personally I think I'm underrated if nothing else. Hey yo, personally I think I'm underrated if nothing else. Hey yo, personally I think I'm underrated if. Hey yo, personally I think I'm underrated if nothing else.
Daddy-O is an MC and record producer. He began his career as a member of the pioneer hip-hop group Stetsasonic with Prince Paul. Throughout the years, Daddy-O has spent his time remixing and working with artists such as Freestyle Fellowship, Mary J. Blige, Queen Latifah, Living Color, Big Daddy Kane, the B-52s, and the Red Hot Chili Peppers. The air date of this podcast is Thursday, November 10th, 2016, and it's a good
one. My man Daddy-O once said to me, my man Daddy-O once said to me, my Daddy-O once said to me.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, dudes and dudettes, the sexy and the not-so-sexy, big children and little, welcome. Special show today. I am the novelist or the poet Lamar Anthony Wright, a.k.a. Graffiti Blue. I might be a favorite poet. I might not be. Talking to Daddy-O on the line, frontman for legendary rap group Stetsasonic. How's it going, Daddy-O?
I'm good, brother. How you doing?
Man, I'm blessed and not stressed, man. Thank you for your time, man. We just chopping it up. Yeah, man. We just chopping it up, man. What do you? I know you got a busy schedule and all of that good stuff, man. I just want to talk to you real quick, man. Well, what's your take on kind of where hip hop is at right now?
Well, you know, one of the things I always say, I often say, is that people don't take the numbers into consideration. And when I say numbers, I mean like population. People don't take, like, so I say it this way. It's a facetious way I say it, but I say it this way. I say, when we started doing this, it was only five of us. Now, of course, it was more than five.
Right.
I'm doing that to make a point to say that, you know, of course, when we were doing, you know, what we were doing, and I really call myself second generation. I call Mary Madden Modine and them first generation. So, when we were doing it, of course it was quote-unquote purer because there were so little people doing it, and we got to also understand that as we were doing it, we're also learning to do something. So it wasn't like we knew what we were doing when we started. We just continued to perfect our crafts and all the things that was around us. You know, we never knew. For instance, I'll give you an example. I think Flash is an incredible DJ. I think Theodore is an incredible DJ. But for them to see what was going to be happening with, like, somebody like a DJ Lord or a Q-Bird, I don't really think that was in their vision. I don't think they knew turntablism and beat juggling would come out of what they was doing.
Right.
That's just progression, right? That's just, you know, in the beginning, those guys just playing records. Then guys are backspinning records to, you know, to do what they call the quote-unquote the get-down part. And then later on, like, they start messing around with it. So I guess it's probably the same with people like Hendrix and Carlos Santana with the guitar. When people first started playing the guitar, they probably played it a lot more plain and a lot more regular. As the culture of playing the guitar progressed, and I guess cats got fancier and fancier, or, you know, tricks, whatever you want to call them. So I say all that to say this. A lot of times you hear people talk about people talk about hip hop, and you know, you hear them say it's whack, right?
Right.
I mean, my son is 25, and he says he doesn't even look old that they're doing hip hop. He says that, you know, it should be called something else. Now, I disagree with him, but I understand his point. But when you take into consideration the numbers, then you kind of understand it, because there's still a googol of great material
right
out there.
Right.
I mean, a lot of it. And it's actually more than it was even in our day and time, because now it's an international culture.
Indeed.
So it being an international culture means that you got some good German stuff, some good stuff in Belgium, some great stuff coming out of Spain and France.
Right.
So, of course, you actually got more dope hip-hop now than you had in the past, but in terms of the scenery, probably when you talk to people. And, you know, in my generation, I tell people all the time, I don't think hip-hop in particular has changed. I do think it has progressed. I think black radio has changed, and I think that changes the face of things, right?
Right.
Because if you put, you know, black radio is going to play what it takes to stay on the radio. It's going to play what it takes to keep the ad money rolling in. That happens to be, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful,
no.
That happens to be Fetty Wap or Young Thug, then that's just what it is.
Right.
You know,
right.
Whereas in the beginning, when I was doing it, at least the beginning of records, when I was doing it, it was a different take on it, because, you know, we were just starting to come up. So there was actually, you know, all truth be told, most of the guys that was playing our records in the beginning were scared as hell. They was going to lose their jobs.
Oh, wow. Is that right?
Yeah, it was just like, you know, hey, you know, we're gonna try it because it's dope. This was popping in the city. This was popping in the clubs. It's definitely with, and then that, the hope that they had actually panned out, the hope was that the phone lines would light up. And if the phone lines lit up, then that would save it, because they'll play it, and there might be a guy in the other room saying, what the heck is he putting on?
Right.
The phone lines light up, and, you know, well, we love that. Thanks for playing that. But it proves that he was right about it. You know what I'm saying? But these guys I'll be brutally honest, man. They were just afraid they might lose their jobs playing rap records, because it was something brand new. It was something that a lot of people was frowning upon.
Right.
They were saying, we don't know if this is music. Well, they didn't even say we don't. They said we wasn't music. I mean, it straight out and out. They said, that's not music. You know, y'all scratching up those records. Y'all making real good. You know, at best you're a poet, but, don't try to bring that poetry stuff around here. And, you know, so it was very competitive as well. So that changes the scope of it as well.
No, a lot of people don't realize that the same way today you got rap lyricists, or like rap purists who really about lyrics, will criticize some of the young cats like Lil Uzi or Lil Yachty or Kodak Black. But if people knew the history, they would know that, you know, your song from Stetsasonic, you know, talking all that jazz, had started from, you know, a jazz musician criticizing y'all for sampling records, you know what I mean? So a lot of people don't know the history and don't realize how cutting edge and what a big deal it was for De La Soul, for example, to get sued for sampling,
right.
And how things adjusted, or even when lyricism came into play, like before the Rakims and Canes, and how people looked at these guys as more of poets, and they was trying to play those guys to the left, because I came in on the tail end of guys like Fresh Fly, Wild and Bold, and, you know, the
right,
Funky
right.
Four and those guys. So I saw, when I came into it, I came and I saw that first changing of the guard, to speak. So, and I hear these guys talking now about what they don't like, and what they don't like this and they don't like that, and I'm like, man, there's so many dope
MCs on the planet. Like, you could just go to freaking YouTube, like you said, and catch somebody from Germany, catch some graffiti artist from Germany, or some DJ from Belgium that'll really blow your mind on what they could, where they took hip hop to, you know. So
exactly, you know, exactly. I agree. I think it's like, I don't know what to call it, but it's an industry thing too, and I don't mean music industry, I just say industry period. There are still people who, you know, don't like the way new cars are being made.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's kind of an industry thing. What happens is that you're always going to have those purists. My challenge to them is this: if you're going to be a purist, just be a purist, but just kind of understand where you stand, right? Because, you know, there's a lot of jazz artists that particularly don't like, you know, the smooth jazz format.
Right.
And, you know, feel real bad that in most cities around the country, if you do have any authentic jazz on the radio, it's usually in the 80s, right?
Right.
And they're kind of just, you know, ticked off about, hey, the real jazz is always way down the dial.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And that's almost every city, right? That's here in Atlanta. I know Atlanta and New York, because I lived in both of them, and both of them is 88 or something. And, the smooth jazz, or quote-unquote smooth jazz, always gets the other, you know, the other stations, the 107.
Yeah,
there's a lot of people that don't like it, but if you just kind of come clean with the fact that, you know, that's just not my cup of tea, I think that's fine. I think when you begin to start criticizing that other thing, that's where it gets a little crazy. Because if you ever notice with music, right, and I know we're still talking about hip hop, but with music in general, things run their course. So if they're not going to happen, like if they're not going to end up being a staple, it just doesn't. There's, I don't want to say a million, I'm being facetious, I'm just making an example, but
right.
A million punk bands. But there's only a handful of punk bands that stood the test of time in terms of, oh, the Ramones are classics. You know what I'm saying?
Right. No, that is true. That is very true.
A lot of punk bands, man. I was there because, you know, we started almost in New York around the same time. So at any given time, when I'm beginning to perform, I'm performing maybe with a punk band. There's a lot of punk bands. A lot of them didn't last. So
right.
It's going to run its course anyway, is what I'm trying to say. And so criticizing it really does not much to, it doesn't make, it's not a good look. In my case, in my opinion, it's a good look to criticize it.
I understand what you're talking about 1,000%. I don't like to criticize. One thing, how I judge it, Daddy-O, is typically like this. If you can explain to me your position, you see, my problem isn't necessarily with the new school. My problem is if you can't explain your position, and I'll explain by taking it back a little bit. Now, the argument that people had for sampling records was like, hey, look, you know, I'm a jazz musician, and it took me 3 days to compose this music. And you guys just take 8 bars, loop it, and you guys go platinum. And I'm selling. I'm barely going gold as a jazz musician. I want a check. I want you. Can you split that pie with me? That argument, I understand that argument, right? Now, if we then question the youth, be like, hey man, you know, all you talking about is sipping syrup. And you don't have a lot of lyrical content. Talk to me about that. You know, what is your argument? So when you come back and be like, well, if I want to get drunk, do drugs, and just turn up in the club, it's my right to do that. If you don't give that strong argument for the culture, it's hard for people to back you. But at the same time, I don't get mad because I know those artists may not last the test of time, because you probably aren't going to get older and listen to Get Drunk records. You know what I mean?
Right, exactly. And I think we should talk I think that's the operative word. That word, I think that communication,
absolutely,
lines is just not there.
Right.
So what happens is that you hear a lot of criticism, a lot of criticism. But if you were to ask these people who are criticizing, say, some of these young folks, have you ever met them? Have you ever reached out to them? Have you even added them on Twitter?
Right.
You come up, no. No. And so I'm like, hold on, like, you know, like, if you're not talking to them, then you're not really understanding exactly what's going on, exactly where they're coming from, or anything. So, I'll be brutally honest, I don't think you could argue with me.
Right.
And I get that. The point of the matter is that at least I'm one of those guys that want to hear them out.
Indeed.
And I understand where they come from. And I do understand the difference between things, and I understand that some things Hey, can we pause for 2 seconds?
Yes, we can.
I'll come right back.
Okay.
I don't think that they have a pony in the game, something like that, right?
I don't think they
have a pony in the game if it comes down to arguing with me. I mean, you know, I'm usually hysterically intact because of my peers, right? I was taught by some of the best. Including Mel and Russell and all of them. So I pretty much know. I mean, I said something about hip-hop a couple of months ago, and Crazy Legs called me and said, hey, Daddy-O, you on point with this, and this, but let me tell you what, you was wrong here.
Crazy Legs. Yes, Crazy Legs. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, dudes and dudettes, if you don't know who Crazy Legs is, Crazy Legs is a breakdance legend. I'm pretty sure in the Breakdance Hall of Fame, Crazy Legs is in there, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, was Crazy Legs a part of the Rocksteady crew?
Yeah, absolutely. So Legs called me. Corrected me, so I'm, you know, my point is, I don't worry about whether or not they could argue with me. But my point is, I don't think it's fair of my peers to criticize them if they haven't spoken to them.
No,
if you have a conversation with them, that's fine.
Once upon a time, I mentored some young fellas in the game who called themselves the Brodomatics. Y'all can download the Brodomatic Project. It's a good project. It's on iTunes and Spotify and Google Play. But when I was mentoring these guys, Daddy-O, I had these guys in the studio, and I noticed they were talking about lives they were not living. So I pulled them to the side, and I was like, fellas, if you continue to talk about cars you don't drive, clubs you don't go to, and women you don't sleep with,
right,
when you go out and you start touring these records, them boys are gonna test you.
They will.
I was like, so you can talk about all of this all you want. I'm not here to tell you how to rap, but I am warning you of the karma that is probably going to happen if you rap like that. And do you know they never rapped like that again? Because they really put their head around it, like...
Right.
They did not, and these guys out of California, and we did a couple of local shows in L.A., and they were really happy that them boys did not try to test them.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Streets is always watching, man. Streets is always watching. You know, the streets gonna be the street regardless, man. So
absolutely,
I mean, that's true, man. We definitely need to have an open line of communication. Another thing I say that a lot of my peers don't agree with me.
I don't see them all.
They don't try to argue with me, but they definitely disagree with me.
Okay.
And that is, I call it our fault, and they don't like to take the fault. But I say, listen, man, it's our fault, maybe even out of default, if that makes sense. You know, we were so busy making what we was making and doing right. what we was doing. So I understand that. I mean, we're in the middle of creating something, trying to figure out, arguing with an engineer on a turntable, because anybody knows a real turntable with ceramic in it is just it's like a microphone on steroids, right? It's
right.
the amplified. So
yeah.
engineers are like, I am not plugging that thing into the board and blow my speakers.
Right.
You know, and so, you know, there's all these fights and all this kind of stuff, and that's how come some of them. A lot of times, if you heard records back in the day, if you listen to some of the records that came out back in the day, and particularly late 70s, early 80s, you might hear the group or the MC call out his DJ, and you might not hear scratch the first.
Right.
That was because engineers were just afraid to take a turntable and put it through the board because they knew they was going to blow everything. Yeah. Or they was afraid that they would blow everything.
You know and something?
Never until somebody got smart and said, yeah, we could just do a DI box the way we do with everything else, and then they figured it out.
Right.
Before that, it was pandemonium.
That is a great story, by the way. I never knew that.
Yeah. So... You know, there was all of these variables that made us busy. That's what I'm saying, right? So I understand that. But I still say, if you're mad at somebody like Doug or Yacht or whatever, it's your fault. And when I'm saying your fault, I'm saying it's your fault, Daddy. And people could say whatever, but you didn't really leave a blueprint. Now, even fans have argued with me and said, Daddy, y'all did leave a blueprint, you know? What you did was a blueprint. I said, no. What I did was a blueprint, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful here, I'm just calling it the way it is. What I did was a blueprint for smart people.
Smart people pick up when nobody else
tells them to. The rest of the world, you have to actually tell them what to do step by step.
Okay. Hey, Dad.
You know, and we didn't do any step by step for anybody that was coming after us.
No,
we
you
didn't even think about that.
No, I remember being a young boy and just going out to like high school parties. And they would put Ghostetsa on. And now I'm like 15, 16. And
right.
Oh my God, that record, the energy behind that record was so freaking nuts. And people was really catching neck spasms doing the WAP to that shit.
Right.
So, you know, you talk about blueprint for smart people. I told my man Vaughn, I said, whenever we make this record, it has to feel something like this.
You
follow what I'm saying? Because it was just, you know, to go Brooklyn in the background, all of that shit was nuts. Speaking of Brooklyn or abroad, do you have, I saw you, I was trolling you for like 12 days, and I saw an interview you did with Sway on Sway in the Morning, and you were just going through like one crazy story after the other. Some were from Brooklyn, some were from, you know, wherever you were at the time. Do you have any crazy out of town stories, like you and the crew was out of the country and something just went bizarre?
Let me see. The country, not really for us. We went through some interesting things out of town. I remember one time we were in, I want to say it's Milwaukee.
Okay.
And this is right around the time that PE is really starting to make that impact.
Okay.
And we literally had to sneak out of Milwaukee, man. It wasn't just the police, but it was the redneck police was actually really after us.
No, I remember how much beef that Public Enemy, or just at least attention Public Enemy was getting, you know, when a Nation of Millions, It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back drop.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Oh, God.
It was bananas.
At the count of three, I want y'all to tell me the name of my DJ. One, two, three.
Yo, I gotta hear that one more time, man. One, two, three. Yeah, boy, for all those that didn't understand, Terminator X.
It was banana. The other thing that I always, and it's just funny, it's just a funny story to me. In Detroit, there's a gang called the Young Boys. I don't know if it still exists, but there's a gang in Detroit called the Young Boys.
Detroit,
right?
Young Boys, okay.
Yeah, and I remember one time we went to do a show in Detroit. It was at the Joe Louis Arena. It was Stetsasonic, Public Enemy. It was the first time we ever performed with NWA.
Okay.
EPMD was on that show, and somebody else. It might have been him, I'm not sure.
Okay.
But anyway,
nice.
We go to do this show. And, you know, we like backstage, you know, but, you know, we kind of, you know, moving around. Show hasn't started yet, but we all in the venue.
Mm-hmm.
And I see two of these guys out there, and I knew who they was. I knew the affiliation, and you know, a lot of them guys was tall. So these two guys were tall, super tall.
Okay.
They had on fedora hats, incredible hats, and they had these links on, and the links was damn near down to their ankles.
Wow.
And they was there, and I noticed that, like, every time any one of us that were performing or in that performance crew, anytime any one of us had to go backstage and then, you know, come back out into the arena area, right, we had to show our badge. You know, we had to show the laminate or whatever the hell.
Okay, like a backstage pass or whatever?
Yeah, right. We had to always show that.
Right.
Meanwhile, I'm looking at these dudes, the Young Boys, and I'm seeing them, like, just walking back and forth at will. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're not showing any.
they don't got no backstage pass.
But no, they don't have to have any backstage pass. And I'm saying, I'm looking at it and saying, yo, this is crazy. Like, this is nuts. But the funny part was, they saw me and Chuck D, and they turned around and looked at us, and one looked at the other one and said, "You're down," and just looked at us and started busting out laughing. And me being from the street, it was the weirdest thing in the world because it wasn't a goddamn thing I could do.
Wow.
And I always use that as an example. Like, I don't care who you are or how tough you are or where you come from, you can always be in a position that could be compromised.
You can, yes.
You always got to watch your step. You know what I'm saying? I mean, nothing jumped off, but there was nothing I could do. You know what I'm saying? I know this guy's laughing at me right in my face in another world, another city in Brooklyn. That would have been a whole other story, but not where I was at then.
No. And then
that was mad funny, yeah.
Well, I'm from...
just start cracking up and looking at us, yo. I said, well, I'll be a monkey's uncle.
Well, you know, turnabout is fair play because I have a strong feeling that you fellas from Brooklyn and the Bronx was making out-of-towners feel some type of way when they came through as well, no?
Sometimes. I mean, my crew, we was never about the pressure. We was only about the respect.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So sometimes we would lay it out. Like, for instance, Hammer, who basically don't even know how tough Hammer is and where he come from, they think he's soft, which is totally opposite. But Hammer, I used to lay it out for Hammer at the Latin Quarter all the time. Like, a lot of people don't know that Hammer learned those dances from Stretch and Tron.
No shit.
He used to come to Latin Quarter with me, and that's when his name. I never knew he was never in the beginning. He was never MC Hammer. I know that's Kirk Burrows, and he was in a group called the Holy Ghost Boys.
Can't touch this.
the oh. respected him because I had never known, I had never even heard that someone can even do gospel rap. I respected him because I was like, yo, for real? That's what you do? He was like, yeah, man. Name of my group is the Holy Ghost Boy. I said, man, that's incredible, yo.
Time out. Daddy-O, time out. Are you telling me that MC Hammer was getting his dance on at the freaking Latin Quarter back in the day and they called themselves the Holy Ghost Boys?
He was already a dope dancer. But wow. He used to watch Stretch and Charm and them, and if you look at that move that they call the Hammer move.
Right.
And you look at some old Stretch videos or some old Charm videos, you'll see he got that move from them.
That's crazy. That is nuts.
He was that dude though. I mean, he was that dude. And then the L part is that so Hammer, now, when we get to we're on the Def Jam tour. That's the first one. We're on the Def Jam tour.
I remember that tour.
With LL Cool J.
I remember that tour. My man had the poster. My man had the LL Cool J poster for the Def Jam tour.
Exactly. So we get to Oakland, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they see nothing but Benzes show up in front of our tour bus. And Lou, and his brother and him, Louis Morrell and Hammond, and get out and take us. Like, come on, man, let's go. And I was looking like, yo, who is that? You know what I'm saying? Like, who is that? Because, like, a lot of people don't know. Like, one of them is, man, come on, they for real in the town, yo. It ain't no joke.
Yo, The more I go and navigate in this game, and the more I dig and find out the stories, do you know that MC Hammer's name comes up more often than not? Hammer was really about that life, like...
You can't touch this.
Well, he was. That's my man too. I mean, we go so far back. I remember one time I was at Hammer Crib, right?
Right.
This is a funny story. I remember one time I was at Hammer Crib, right? And it was me, it was Deion Sanders, it was Warren Moon. It's me, Deion Sanders, Warren Moon, and Aaron Hall, and I took Shakira with me. And I remember Deion telling Aaron about R. Kelly, and Deion looked at Aaron and said, "Yo, man, if somebody stole my style like that, I'll punch him right in his face." It was so funny. And Aaron's like, "What you talking about?" He said, "Man, look at everything. Man, you said he took the stick from you. Now he got a bad head. He sound like you. If that was me, man, I'll punch him right in his face." That was so funny, yo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, dudes and dudettes, the sexy and not so sexy, big children and little, welcome. If you don't know who I'm on the phone with, this is Daddy-O from the legendary Rap Band. They were actually the first rap band. I love the Roots, Stets, but y'all actually had the title first. Man, we talking to the front man, Daddy-O of Stets Sonic, and he's telling us all kinds of funny stories with Warren Moon. I didn't expect that. When I was doing the research, I had no idea we would be talking about Warren Moon and Aaron Hall in the same room, player.
Hammer got a lot of good friends, man.
No, I hear Hammer's really about that life, and he stepped to some key people in the industry that wasn't necessarily digging his music, man. I know there was a lot of pushback when the West Coast, for example, started making their push in hip-hop, and there was a little pushback from New York. I guess New York was a little arrogant. Were you guys reaching out to the West Coast brothers besides the Holy Ghost Boys?
Here's the interesting part. So we same tour.
Okay.
Def Jam tour. We get to L.A. The Swatmans, even though in New York they did it out on the street in Harlem and stuff, Swatmans was like super, super duper powerful for the Boulay tapes.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, they're killing it, right? Because, and you know, now in hindsight being 2020, you know, you almost feel sorry for the way cats handled those dudes, because they were doing that. Yeah, they was making money off of it, that if those guys in those swap meets would have never sold those tapes, a lot of our music would have never got heard. They were doing that out of necessity because a lot of the stores wouldn't pick our music up.
Okay.
See what I'm saying? So you think about going to a record store and having to go to 9 stores in order to find a Stetsasonic or Eric B. and Rakim album.
Right. No, you just couldn't go. No, a lot of people don't realize that. You just couldn't just pick even the popular so-called golden age of hip-hop records. Right. A lot of people don't realize that there was only certain shops that even sold hip-hop.
Exactly. So, but you're probably going to be at a swap meet or a Slauson or somewhere on a Saturday or a Sunday.
Right.
And along with anything else that you grab in, you know, T-shirts, Dickies, whatever, you're gonna see some guys out there with some music, and then it's gonna be that music that you wanna hear. Mm-hmm. And you ain't gotta run far. The other thing they was doing is they wasn't technically mixtapes because they wasn't really mixed, but they were compilation tapes of like all the hot stuff. So you might have Ghost Stetson on there, Eric B. the President on there, an Ice-T record on there. You know what I'm saying? Like, and those West Coast swap meets were also primarily responsible for kind of showing that it was all one cultural genre, because New Yorkers wasn't doing that. New Yorkers wouldn't put no Ice-T on their tapes or whatever, but the guys on the West Coast would mix it all up.
No.
You know what I'm saying? Because it's all watching them, right? So, anyway, this particular time, Eric and them, so yeah, we were on the swap meet. They went out to the swap meet basically to beat up the bootleggers and take all their music.
Okay, right.
So, even when they got back, you know, they handed me a bunch of tapes, like, oh, we got all these for you. Like, they came back with a googab of stuff, gave Houdini their stuff, gave us our stuff, like, you know, like that. Because that's what they went out there for.
Wow.
But what me and Chuck had the Eazy-E joint, really the NWA joint,
right.
Dope Man joint. And so we played the Dope Man joint on the bus. Don't you know that besides for me and Chuck, everybody in Public Enemy argued with him, and everybody in Stetsasonic besides Wise, who actually was one of Easy's good friends before Easy passed away.
No shit.
Besides Wise, was like, yo, that's whack. And me and Chuck was trying to explain to them, like, yo, it's not whack, it's just not y'all.
Right.
But you can't expect hip hop to just keep coming from y'all. You know what I'm saying? What did you expect? Like, everything was just gonna always come from New York. It was always gonna sound like the Cold Crush. Like, that's not gonna happen, yo.
No.
You know what I'm saying? And it was very interesting because it was really in denial of the dopeness of it. So I would say, you know, Chuck, my man, I would say, you know, me and Chuck was definitely not one of the naysayers, but it took a lot of other folks a long time to come around.
It really did, and it really took the co-sign of because I remember seeing Chuck in that video with Ice Cube and Kane. You know, Burn Hollywood Burn. And once a lot of people started seeing Chuck really messing with the West heavy, and they there was some acceptance there. But I'm going to keep it a buck with you. I remember playing the Snoop album for the first time, and dudes ran on me on the corner in Linden Boulevard telling me to cut that West Coast shit off.
Yeah. Of course. I mean, they didn't get it. Like, they didn't get it. And that's fine. I mean, I think that's okay for people to not like something.
Right.
But I didn't like rappers not liking it. Like, I don't care. But the audience, that's their business. Like, if you end up liking one rapper over the next rapper, that's their business. I mean, remember, there wasn't only New York, you know. You had Philadelphia. A lot of cats ain't like Schooly D and Ruben them. So that's fine. You know what I'm saying? That's fine. You don't like it, that's fine. The thing that bothered me is that, yo, you in this culture, like, you gotta understand that the way I felt anyway was we all in this thing together.
Indeed.
They don't like none of us out. They're going to wipe us all out. They're not going to say, oh, you guys are good to go, but forget Snoop and them. That's not going to happen. Or, oh, Snoop and them is good to go, but forget Saul. I said, man, when they look at us, man, they look at us all the same. That's why Luke was always a good friend. From the very beginning, Luke was always a good friend. All of that.
Oh, Luke.
This wasn't the kind of music that I was making.
Oh, Miami Bass?
It wasn't like the kind of music.
Miami Bass, Luke? Luke Skywalker?
Yes.
Oh, gotcha.
If you look on the M4G album, you'll see that our record, Miami Bass, is co-produced by Luke.
Ah.
You know? Because we came up with the record, but we was like, yo, did we do this right?
No, I remember they had a crazy network because my man James used to have these underground Miami tapes from a cousin of his.
Right.
And he had a song. He had Luke's one. Luke had an underground song. Well, it was underground then, at least, called Throw That D. And I was like, what the hell is this? And he was just rocking it, but it was so bass heavy, and it was so foreign, unlike anything I've ever heard, but it was funny as hell to me, you know what I mean? I mean, they were trying to be funny in that particular record, you know, so I'm not talking about like I'm laughing at their lyrical skill or nothing
right.
But, I mean, the song was just crazy, and I noticed the girlies was dancing a little bit differently to that Miami sound that was coming up next.
Oh, yeah, we got popular in Miami for a song that we did called On Fire, which is the title cut to our first album.
Wow, okay.
Because On Fire had that 808.
Yeah, they love that 808.
And On Fire, actually, if you take On Fire, you can literally take On Fire. If you double the speed, it'll sound just like one of them booty drop records.
Don't stop! Pop that pussy, let me see your doo-doo brand.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that wave hit New York by a storm. I remember that when that record then that I heard on the underground for like almost like a year or two before it really grabbed a hold in the club, and it would be like the dullest parties, and they would throw on that Miami sound, and it would be like 100 people just twerking to the freaking record. I was like, what the hell is this Miami sound? But I wasn't really that mad, though.
it was always going to come. It's always going to come from different directions. And I think that even when we talk about today's music, I think that, or today's popular music, put it that way, today's popular rap music or today's popular hip-hop music, even when we talk about that, I think that the biggest disappointment is the lack of variation. I don't think that it's in particularly people just being disappointed for no damn reason.
No.
I don't think it's that. But I do think that there's a large disappointment in the lack of variation, because when everything sounds the same, it's funny, right? So I DJ, and I was getting ready to go play this party the other night. It didn't turn out the way, it actually turned out way better than I thought, and not the way I thought it was. But I went to DJ this party the other night, and I was messing around with my Serato. I got this controller that plays Serato, but it also plays like sticks, but then it also plays like CDs too. So anyway, I was messing around with it because one of my plates wasn't working right on the controls. So I was just trying to check some stuff out. And I called my man and I said, hey man, I need you to send me some stuff because, you know, I don't always have the new stuff. So he said, I'll send you my stuff and I'll send you my cousin's stuff too. So they sent me everything, like everything. Plus, I always play clean. I don't care what kind of party I'm at, but in most cases, I always play clean. So I said, you know, and then he knows that. My man plays clean, so he sent me everything new clean.
Okay.
And I was in the living room practicing it, and it was so easy to do. I couldn't even believe, because almost every single one of those songs are at the same tempo.
Oh, right. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it was just so easy. It was either two beats, you know, two BPMs ahead or two BPMs below, which still, you know, to the regular ear, just sounds the same. You know, and I'm just throwing this stuff around, and I'm going from one to the other. I was like, this is so easy, and that's kind of weird because even as a DJ, DJs will tell you this all the time, we like challenges. You know, I love taking my salsa as Brand Combo and trying to mix it with a friggin' rap record or trying to mix it with some R&B record. Like, you know what I'm saying? And a lot of times, I hear it in my head, so it's cool. And I know the tempo is the same, but rhythm-wise, it ain't the same.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So I might be mixing some Erykah Badu with Grand Combo, but the way it feels is crazy. You know what I'm saying?
Indeed.
And, you know, you can change the bass down on one and sound like Erykah's vocals over a salsa record. You know what I'm saying? But we like those kind of challenges. Playing this new stuff, there's no challenge.
No, I noticed that's the one thing that sticks out. Like, a lot of people... for this mumble rap crave, to me, I'm not dissing the young guys. I mean, you know, but I'm not sipping syrup and I'm not doing that stuff. That's not where I'm at. But at the same time, I'm not 16, so that's what it is. But listening to those guys, they all sound like Lil Wayne when he started doing drugs. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, so that was a father to his style. And it seemed like at once upon a time, everybody was very distinctive. Like, you could put on an EPMD record and you already knew that they didn't sound like anybody else. You could put on LL Cool J was very distinctive. Stetsasonic was very distinctive. Houdini was very distinctive. Run DMC was doing the rock and roll thing. Everybody had these different pockets and different lanes. So when you put on the record, you knew within the first four bars, like, who that was. And
right.
And now you can't tell these guys apart from one another. And, you know, I say it on Twitter all the time. It's like, once upon a time, originality was the thing to be. Like, people really, really embellished being different from everybody else. I would remember having new music, and then you playing new music on your radio, your car, whatever, and you'd be like, oh man, you don't know nothing about that. You ain't up on this. People used to talk like that, like, oh, you don't know nothing about this, you know, but now it seems like if you ain't selling, like, public perception at least, if you're not selling a million records, you know what I mean? People be like, oh, you're not relevant, when I know a lot of kids are very active. Like, they'll say Eminem fell off, but this guy is filling football stadiums in Europe. You know what I mean?
Right, exactly.
You know what I mean? That's like, you guys, I'm like, what's your definition of success? Because if you doing what you love and you don't got a day job, to me, you're successful.
Right, exactly. I think what happens is, though, to your point is, it really is an issue of what's applauded, right? And so what happens is that the applause is what brings on the next level of it,
right? Right.
And nowadays, well, put it a bit. Let's go back first. Back in the day, originality was applauded, and so it wasn't only applauded by the peers, but it was also applauded by the audience as well. The audience wanted to hear who's different. You know, who is that? Somebody did something on a fast beat, or somebody did something with a lower voice registry, or whatever. Who is that? You know, that's what was applauded. Nowadays, whether it's the audience, radio, or whoever, a lot of sameness is applauded.
Yeah, that's true.
And so it's where they're coming from, because they're doing things the same to be applauded. They're doing things the same to be accepted. You know what I'm saying? And so you might have somebody doing a record in the same tempo, because they feel like, oh, if I do this, I'll play out. You know, them guys understand that it don't take much for a record to be out now.
Right, you know, no, it doesn't.
It's a whole incredible process in the past for that thing to even hit. There.
Indeed.
You know, now you can record it today, and as soon as you finish bouncing it, it could be on the internet.
No, that's true.
That's a different regimen. That's a different thing happening. So now it's like, oh, let me get this out, especially if you got a little bit of a name. So you got a halfway decent name, or you're down with somebody that's halfway decent. Now you can get this thing out. So you just heard this Rick Ross record and said, hey, let me do something that feels a little like that, that's in that same tempo, blah, 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 and then you do it, and you get it out there quick enough, of course, by Friday night, some DJ is taking that and mixing it with the Rick Ross record.
Oh, let me tell you, I know about that all too well. The same. It's funny in all music, a lot of guys will act like they don't like you, and then you turn, right, exactly. then they bite in your style, and then all of a sudden they sound exactly. like you.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? I don't like that at all. Is there any of the new cats or newer guys that you listen to nowadays?
I like the underground guys, like self-titled. I like Zarface, which is Esoteric and Inspector Deck.
Okay.
I like Apathy. My friend just turned me on to Ryu, which I probably should have knew about Ryu before, but my friend just turned me on to Ryu. I like him.
Okay.
But, you know, it's mostly underground cats. But me, I listen to records. It's not that I don't listen to records, but like I'm more of a battle rap fan than I am anything else.
No, I am a lyricist. I love what is happening in battle rap, and it's funny that this mumble rap comes off of the heels of some of the most popularized battle rap that we've seen in recent years. So people are like, oh, hip hop isn't lyrical. I'm like, you guys don't know anything about battle rap then.
Right. Yeah, battle rap changed my life. Like I'm actually gonna write a treatise. I don't know how I'm gonna do it, if it's a blog or if it's a series or whatever. But battle rap literally changed my life.
Absolutely. Okay then, since we're going there, I will put you on the spot, Daddy-O. Give me your top five MCs and give me your top five battle rappers. Oh!
Top five MCs is hard.
Okay.
Really, really hard.
Well, because I know a lot of these guys is your friends, so I know you don't want to...
Because I don't put them in numbers, right?
Okay.
So it's probably in no particular order.
Okay.
Probably, and then it's this way that I categorize it. So let me get one thing out the way, and then I'll give you my top five.
Okay.
One thing I got to get out the way is that Melly Mel is the greatest MC to ever do it. So I got to get that out the way.
Okay, Melly Mel.
Now that I got that out the way, I can talk about the top five.
Mm-hmm.
Tariq is probably my number one, Black Thought.
Black Thought, absolutely.
Nas is somewhere up in my top five.
Okay.
Mystical's in my top five.
Mystical, okay. And he is talented. I can't front on Mystical.
But Bun B is in my top five.
Yeah, Bun B is slept on.
Okay, and then let me see a fifth. This is just my top five, right?
Yes.
So, as a five, I would say Andre Nicotina.
Who?
Andre Nicotina from Sacramento.
Oh, Andre Nicotina from Sacramento. Yeah. Okay, that is what's up. That is a dope top five, though. That I've never heard those five MCs mentioned in the same breath. Do you have a top five battle rap category?
Weirdly enough, man, JC is my favorite battle rapper, and that's so weird.
Okay.
It's not like he's the best, but I enjoy JC the most. Like, okay. I don't know why. I just enjoy JC. Old Hitman Holler, of course.
Hitman,
Still Young Sue Center, Still Man Tay Rock.
Yeah.
I love Harlow, because I was saying, like, Harlow never lost. I was telling my man, I said, yo, Harlow never lost. My man was like, yes, he did lose one time. And he showed me this Harlow, what's the boy from, the boy that do, oh, so it's Showtime.
Oh, yeah, did he lose to Averb?
Yeah, he lost to Averb.
Oh,
he
wow, okay, okay.
It was early. But he lost to Averb.
Okay, well, I can see that, because, especially
like,
if they was...
It's a clear loss.
Yeah, because if they...
It's not even debatable. Like, it's a clear loss.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
I saw a battle yesterday that just dropped, man. That friggin' Slave 7 vs. Tempt the Demon, man. Slave 7 don't caught a second breath, yo.
Oh, wow.
Jesus Christ. Man, oh, man.
Oh,
man. He's been in so hard. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, he's really hard. I'm a big fan of Loaded Lux.
I love Lux. Us a lot, because us and moves a lot. I like Rex. I always tell people, blame it on Hitman Holler and T-Rex, because people say, oh, man, Daddy, I like your new stuff, man. I like where you're coming from. And I always say, man, blame it on Hitman Holler and T-Rex, because when I heard them guys start doing the punchlines the way they do the punchlines, that's what got me sharpened, because, you know, I guess I must have stopped thinking about that.
Right. No, they... No.
Until I heard them. And then I was like, oh, this is cool.
No, the angles that they take...
You know, really.
Yeah, the angles that they take and the way that they formulate their sentences for the punches is definitely will have you... If they don't make you sharpen your pen game up, nothing else will.
You are now listening to Just My Thoughts on G-Blue Radio, powered by Blog Talk Radio for Graffiti Blue, worldwide at gblue.com.
Question. If you write a book, everybody will rush out to buy it. Obvious answer, no. If you were a celebrity or if you had a huge marketing budget, then maybe you can get a lot of exposure for your book. Another solution would be to check out JoeyTweets.com. JoeyTweets.com is a promotion and marketing service with access to over 1/3 of 1 million followers on Twitter. JoeyTweets.com has 3 packages available to fit any budget. That's JoeyTweets.com. JoeyTweets.com. Get some serious exposure for your books.
My man Daddy-O once said to me, my man Daddy-O once said to me, my man Daddy-O once said to me.
I appreciate you taking the time, partner.
No problem, bro.
You know what I mean?
No problem, man. Anytime.
Yeah, man. You know, God bless you. What are you doing before we get out of here, though? What are you doing currently? I know you got a lot going on currently. You want to talk about what you got going on now?
So what I've been doing is I started this quest of making an album a quarter. I'm a little behind on this third quarter record for 2016, and I'm delaying it kind of on purpose. I have talked to a few members of my team, and they're like, let's slow it down a little bit. Let's let a few things sink in. I did about 8 videos this year, so that's cool.
Right.
I actually got 2 in the queue right now.
Okay.
One from my second album and one from the present album I just dropped. I put all my stuff up under there. It's available on RCS. But I put everything up on Bandcamp just to make it real easy for everybody. So you look up Professor Daddy-O one word on Bandcamp, and everything is up there. I even did a new song called Bullets. I did 2 songs this year about police brutality.
Okay.
The first one I did was off my second quarter record this year called Blood Got Shot, which is pretty much, you know, it's one of Chuck's favorite records.
Okay.
And then I just did a new one called Bullets after the whole thing had happened with a couple of other brothers. And I was like, man, look at all these people that still got gunned down after I even made Blood Got Shot. So I ended up doing another one called Bullets. But I put Bullets up there as a special, it's like a bonus track, because it's going to end up going on my next album. But the other 3 albums are up there. The first one I did is called Everybody But KRS. The second one is called Old Dad, the Gun, and the Children. And the third one, which I just put out not too long ago, is called Aldona de Bacaya, which is translated, The Pain in the Streets. It's The Pain of the Streets. It's that in Spanish. I just really like the way The Pain of the Streets sounded in English. I thought it sounded corny.
So I had to translate it
for you. I got this statement. And I don't want to say philosophy. It can't really be a philosophy yet. But I do have a statement, and I say, you know, adults listen to hip-hop, but there's no such thing as adult hip-hop. So I'm trying to change that.
Indeed.
You know, it's kind of weird, like, you know, working with people at the boom stations and all of that kind of stuff. It's like, yeah, adults are listening to hip-hop, but what they're listening to is the same thing they listen to when they grew up.
Indeed.
You know? But then they're not, they're, you know, but then there's no adult hip hop. Like, there's nothing that reads adult hip hop.
No.
And that's just really, really weird to me. You know? So I think the first step, and probably the first record that I've heard that I could ever call adult hip hop, is this new De La Soul record, Service.
Oh man, yes, De La, and is, I'm glad.
I'm sorry.
No, it's all good, man. I'm glad De La. I'm glad De La Soul came out, came up because De La Soul was one of the first people to challenge what we was talking about earlier, which was that kind of uniformity. You know what I mean? Yeah. The first De La Soul album was really very critical of all rappers that were sounding the same. If you know, they were the first one to kind of coin the phrase rap uniform. Like, why do all rappers have to have a gold chain and a Kangol at the time? You know what I mean? You know, so I was really glad to see that De La Soul came back into the fray. They just dropped that like 2 weeks ago, didn't they?
It's a little longer than 2 weeks, but it's an incredible, incredible record.
Okay.
I got them their deal.
Did you?
Because Paul was producing them, and he was like, yo, I got it to here, but I have no idea what to do from here. And he let me hear Trump tune, and I was like, this is crazy. I had three deals on the table in 1 week. It's just Tommy Boy moved quicker.
Wow.
And everybody I took that demo to wanted to sign them.
That's crazy. Yeah, I was here. You were probably kind of behind the scenes on a lot of these cats. I had no idea that you helped put De La Soul on. That is very freaking cool.
Yeah, we've always been very helpful, just stylistically in terms of just the way we live our lives. Me and the guys and my friends and stuff. We've always been very helpful. So we You know what I'm saying? Anytime we could ever lend a hand to people, you know, there's a whole bunch of people who tried to help, didn't really, you know, fell on deaf ears. A lot of demos I shot, never got signed, but, you know, still in all, you know, we've always been on that, like, let's just try to help the neighborhood and get people on and all of that kind of stuff. So, that was definitely a blessing. I mean, when I first heard Club Tune, I just lost it. I was like, everybody's gonna love this, man.
Yeah, that first album kicked my ass. I think my favorite De La Soul record to date, though, has to be that Stakes Is High. The saxophones in there, reminiscent of all that jazz. That shit was just so hypnotic.
You might change your mind after you hear this new record, though.
Oh, I bet, man. I was checking out that song Graffiti before I hit you up, man. I was digging that song Graffiti, and
I was saying for De La, you might change your mind on what's your favorite.
I will be downloading that this afternoon.
This record is crazy. When I say crazy, this record's crazy.
Okay. Well, I figured they wasn't going to come back to play. I figured they wasn't coming back to play no games. So
No, it's no games.
Okay.
It's straight lyrical. They totally buffing MCs over the head. Like, the record is dope, yo.
Yeah, and I know. And I know they probably had a lot to say social commentary-wise about how the state of it was. And I thought De La Soul actually was pretty gangster because they would talk about people real quick, like they would go against the grain. You know what I mean?
Yep.
You know, I'm.
Yeah, they do the same thing on this record.
Oh,
I bet.
Yeah,
I'm gonna get on out of here because he sent me on his way.
Yes, sir, Daddy O. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, dudes and dudettes, we were talking to Daddy O, talking about a whole bunch of host of stuff. Daddy O, I will get you this audio when I'm done messing with it, okay, partner? Thank you for your time. I will certainly do that. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, dudes and dudettes, the sexy and the not so sexy, big children and little, that is a wrap. Thank you to my main man, Daddy O, for putting his voice and his wisdom in the crazy podcast. We talked about Hammer. And a host of other craziness. And thank you
personally from GBLEU.com. And in closing, to all people who have listened to my opinion or any other opinion on this podcast over the past hour, know this. It is my personal belief that there is no human soul that is greater than another soul. It is my personal belief that a soul's purpose is to experience what it chooses to experience. It is my belief that the concept of beauty, ugliness, right, wrong, good, and evil are all a matter of personal perspective and truth. It is my personal belief that happiness is a choice. No different than you choosing to place your feet in a square that you outlined in chalk. So in this instance, if the square you designed is a metaphor for happiness, stand inside of it and refuse to ever be pushed out of it. Go to GBLEU.com and hit the follow button, since every creation that comes out of it helps you stay inside that square. Peace to Daddy-O and the five boroughs of New York. Until next time, take care of yourselves. Out.
You know I gotta tell a story, don't you? I'm gonna take you guys back to how it was.
In the days, my main man Pappy said, "Sirs, you should kick a rhyme just where you brag." I listened to him plead his case, but deep down my gut was waving a flag. Ha, the flag was red, making me take pause while he was so sure, steady saying, "You should go for yours." Now, bravado is a part of the essence of hip hop, but I felt this should also have a message. Plus, I didn't have a car tinted up with rims. I was at the bus stop in my Timbs. Stunting and playing was just never me. I blew the idea off and simply just let it be. Ha! To me, hey, young blood, never let them see you coming. Cause if they see you as a threat, your face is exactly where they'll stick the gun in. If they sleep on your skills, it's a good thing. So let them take a nap and go to sleep with their eyes closed. That's why my generation was quick to invent slang like surprise mode. Ha. Now I'm not saying you should tuck your chain or be scared to rock nice things. Just know the code of the streets when you're dangling meat in front of wolves that want to eat. Ha. Play hard, work hard, whether on Wall Street or Malcolm X Boulevard. Never show your whole card. Keep your blessings to yourself or between you and God. Ha. Grade when I got jumped at the arcade just because my grandmother was a maid, a direct descendant of the slave trade. And if I could survive that stress, why the fuck should I prove that I am a success? I confess and digress. I tried to impress many in my circumference. All it showed was there was room to grow and better ways to improve my flow. But I must admit, you may be forced to let a motherfucker know. Ha. The credentials of your resume, just to let them know that you don't play. Have it your way with what you say. Just make sure that you do this shit humbly. Ha.